Colin, my business partner, was living in Western Uganda. He emptied all of his savings and he bought 6 bikes. He started with 6 guys. He had 250 applicants in 24 hours for this lease to own idea.
You don't know that you'd recommend that somebody start their faith-driven enterprise in a remote village in Western Uganda. Maybe it's a great place to build trust and community.
Partnership is not a good idea. It's a God idea. It is woven into the fabric of how we were created. Nobody would argue that we're created for people. And so why would we assume any different?
Bold visionaries, faithful disruptors. Some call them crazy, but they are called to create. Under His Power, For His Glory, the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast.
We're back at Lion's Den with a special series interviewing faith-driven investors and faith-driven entrepreneurs about the work that God is doing in the world in emerging markets. Today, we've got Jared Foulkes from Pure Flow. Incredible episode, an inspiration and encouragement to me on my journey as we look at prayer, we look at partnership, we look about innovating, we talk about tier 2 and tier 3 markets versus tier 1 markets, and that's just the beginning. Super glad you're with us.
This is fun fact. I've had 4 Ubers in 24 hours.
Yeah.
All 4 drivers are from different African countries. Started with Nigeria yesterday. It was his 51st birthday.
Yeah.
He dropped us off here. And then next we had the Congo.
Yeah.
All of his family's back there and it's not good. So we got to pray together.
Eastern Congo? Eastern.
Yeah, he's like right outside of Goma. And well, that's where his family is. And then last night, Ethiopian guy. I was too tired. I wanted to talk about the eunuch, but I didn't. And then this morning, Sandra from Senegal. I was like, what is this, Lord? Like, is this just Dallas? Or did you just, you know, I was praying for opportunities to share. And it just, so I was like, man, this is wild. Africa to Dallas, literally. I don't know. I was encouraged by the Spirit that he's putting me in the car. Like he's there. He's in all of this. So.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You know, and you bring up something that I've never been really great at, which is really being open to how the Holy Spirit would use me in regular, everyday interactions on planes and in Ubers. There was a time where I thought I'd course correct from that a little bit. We had this company that we're going to start in Durham, North Carolina, to help refugees that are coming in from Burma. And I wanted to be able to share my faith and by providing some employment. And I'll never forget I was driving this guy to work, looking to establish a relationship with him.
Yeah.
And just as a way to kind of break the ice, and he spoke some English, but not great English. I asked him what he did that past weekend, since I had picked him up for his work the week before. And his name was Tunza. And Tunza said, well, you dropped me off at my apartment on Friday. And then I went to church for a praise and worship event. And then I was at church all day Saturday. And of course, I was there on Sunday. And then he proceeded to minister to me in a way I hadn't expected, which is amazing. It was incredible. And so God actually had asked me to be more open because he knew that I needed it.
Yeah.
And so for this refugee that was so reliant on God to then minister to me was a special, beautiful thing. And but thank you for that encouragement.
So good.
We're here at this conference in Dallas, and we're all gonna be in Ubers on the way back to the airport. So may the Lord just lead us. And maybe it's in a way that somebody's going to minister to us. We think we're going to minister to them and they minister to us.
You know, last year actually at Lion's Den, I came and we were presenting our business, and final night we had gone out to dinner with everybody. I was taking an Uber actually. I remember it clear as day. So this is about a year ago.
Yeah.
And I was going to the Hyatt Regency at DFW and get in the car with this gentleman, and he's mid-60s. He was having some troubling times with his family. And I felt the Lord was telling me to just speak Jesus to him, and I got to pray with him. And I remember it being, you know, really impactful for him that somebody in the back seat would take a front seat approach, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it was just encouraging how I just think, you know, so often I'm not aware of what God's doing. It's not that he's not in the details. It's that I'm not aware of the details. And I think a lot of it is just being present to that amidst our busyness.
Yeah. So being in Uber is a great spot to be conscious of that, because we have this space where we're in with somebody. And yet the discipline that you're talking about being open to how God might lead you, isn't, of course, just limited to being an Uber rider on on the plane next to somebody. It's an opportunity we have every day with everything we do in business.
Yeah.
And my sense is that as you start a Pure Flow and as you've continued with Pure Flow, that sense has guided you, maybe imperfectly, not all the time, maybe, but enough that you listen to God and what he showed you was a problem that you wanted to solve.
Yeah.
You're a faith-driven entrepreneur. You've got a great lesson and encouragement to people like me and other faith-driven entrepreneurs. But how did it all get started?
Yeah. Speaking of Ubers, so we get to serve thousands of Uber drivers, if you will. They're just on two wheels. Yeah. Some of them actually do use Uber as an app in Uganda. And so my business partner and I have been able to see God do amazing things in serving that specific group of people that are far often overlooked, much like Uber drivers, I would say. And it's a kind of to speak high level about the industry. They're called Boda Boda drivers in Uganda. There's about 1 million of them. There's another couple million in Kenya, and that's kind of the name they're used to describe them in East Africa.
Yeah.
And it really means border to border. So it's like getting things and goods and people from one place to the other. Mm. And it's a massive market, namely because it's a low barrier to entry market. Back to the analogy that most people would understand is, you know, if you can start driving for Uber tomorrow. I actually drove for Lyft when I was, before I got married, wanted to make some money. All I do is have my car, and even now you don't even have to have your car.
Enterprise. Did anybody share the gospel with you when you're driving?
No.
No?
A lot of them had too much to drink, but it was good. And it was a good opportunity, though, to meet people. But the thing is, it's low barrier to entry. And so it's actually the same thing in Uganda for Boda Boda drivers. Low barrier to entry. And so anybody can kind of get into it. Problem is, when you do that, you're typically driving somebody else's asset. And so you're not thinking about owning the thing that's making, income for your family. And so Colin, my business partner, was living in Western Uganda he lived there for 5 years. 2 years into his time there, he started meeting these guys in his community. Not an ideal spot to start a business, by the way. I would not recommend that's where you should start, in this small rural town. But he just started getting to know these guys, and he learned that they didn't own the bike. And he also knew that a lot of them didn't know Jesus. And so he did what any good entrepreneur would do. He emptied all of his savings, and he bought 6 bikes. And he started with 6 guys. He had 250 applicants in 24 hours for this lease-to-own idea, where they could no longer just pay rent indefinitely. They could actually pay weekly for 2 years and own the asset. And so they made 2 commitments. One was pay on time, and 2 was show up to his house. And at his house, he was going to feed him a meal and tell him about Jesus. And so that's how the business started, 2017. We have seen the Lord do amazing things. It was bootstrapped for 3 years. And then we started raising capital in the faith-driven investor space and putting kind of fuel slowly on a fire that was already, burning and that was already profitable, and have been able to serve a lot more people since then. So
you mentioned something that you don't know that you'd recommend that somebody start their faith-driven enterprise in a remote village in Western Uganda. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I would assume that if I went to Stanford, which I haven't, but if I were to go get an MBA there, they would tell me to go to a much bigger market like Kampala to start a business like this. There's a lot more market there. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of the million are just in Kampala. So it's probably a better place to go. And so, a lot of the decisions that we have made are really like, I believe, some of them were methodical and thoughtful and prayerful. Others were on accident. But this upside down kind of kingdom mentality that, it's hindsight as we look back, that I think the Lord was protecting us in a lot of ways as we've continued to put the gospel at the forefront.
Yeah.
Starting in a small rural Western town is not the best place to get a lot of market share.
But maybe it's a great place to build trust and community and
sure.
something out, because this is something I hadn't thought we'd be talking about today. But I would, as a faith-driven entrepreneur and investor, I probably would go to the big city. But I wonder if I'd be able to develop the fabric of trust and relationship and really knowing people. Because there's something that Colin talks about when you all started, just having a bunch of guys roll down out with these motorcycles that were yours, hoping they'd come back, right? But because that trust in the community, that maybe that's better being in a place where there's accountability. Like, they couldn't disappear forever. It's not like in Kampala, maybe they could disappear and never see them again.
Sure.
But maybe there is something about that trust.
And I'm with you on that. I think, and two, that's actually some of our skepticism of even going right into the city even now. Yeah. We're in 11 locations, and they're all, I call tier 2, tier 3 size cities still to this day. And a lot of that is because I think the fabric of our business model and the way we want to care for customers for a long time is actually kind of anti, or it's against the stream of culture, specifically in these busy cities, because they don't want to slow down and be in relationship, to your point. And you know, funny and this is a good story from the beginning. Most people haven't heard this. The six bikes. There's about 3 weeks into this business, and to your point, Colin literally heard his life savings drive off. And a few weeks in, so he's meeting with these guys every week. And a few weeks in, one of the guys, one of the first customers, he committed a really bad crime, and he took the bike and was like going to disappear. And that was kind of his getaway vehicle. And he got to a family member's house, and before he like ran away from the crime, he actually went there and he said, "Hey, I need you to take this bike back to this Mzungu, this white guy in Rukungiri, because there was a relationship built." So that was like from the very beginning. There was no trackers on the bikes, and this guy, just because I think Colin showed that relationship trumped everything, this guy left that asset, and the family delivered it back to Colin. Never heard from the guy again. And I just think that is a testament even today to a lot of the success around, you know, default rates and people moving, you know, from death to life in Jesus, people moving to ownership is kind of based back on that. Like, we've really tried to focus on relationship.
That's very cool. Yeah, I spent a lot of time recently in New York City, and then spent a lot of time, we live in Washington, D.C. Half the year. And I've noticed, maybe because I've been in those cities that I once lived in, but I'm back in, that there is something different about urban, you know, so people talk a lot about urbanization in Africa, right? That's a big deal. You go where the jobs are. And yet there's some pluses and there's some minuses. Maybe just talk a little bit more about what you're seeing going on in tier two and tier three cities, how you see the gospel move, the opportunity for a faith-driven entrepreneur to be a part of the community. And what's that look like? Do you see that the future of Uganda will be more of these tier two and tier three cities, and that people will see that Kampala is overbuilt and then they kind of go back? Does entrepreneurship enable that? Or do you see that this trend towards urbanization, because that's where the infrastructure is just, that's an unstoppable trend.
Yeah.
But what's your take? Because you're on the ground in these emerging markets. What's your take on all that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, let's speak practically. So a lot of times what happens is, you know, people get to these urban areas for like school. So they'll go to the universities in these places because those are typically the best universities. And, you know, there's definitely education challenges. I can't speak to all the details of them, but it's ultimately an employment challenge. So they get degrees and they don't have jobs. And what we found specifically in our, you know, we've hired a lot of people. And so we'll find people that have gone to university in Kampala in the big city.
Yeah.
And, you know, they actually want to go back out kind of to, I'm saying rural, they're not small cities, but tier two size cities, because the pace of life is different. I mean, much like I think there's still in the US, like, you know, I live in Atlanta, but I live outside of Atlanta, and I would probably love to live a little further outside of Atlanta. Pace of life, trying to raise a family, you know, community, things outside of work.
Yeah.
And then also cost of living. I mean, in these towns like Lagos and Nairobi and Kigali, and you know, they're expensive.
Yeah.
And so when you're trying to look for a job, a lot of times I found that the compensation is not tied to cost of living in these places. And so even a college, you know, graduate getting a job in Kampala could make the same with us living in a place that's cheaper to live. And so I think that's some of the practical things of how I think people are moving. You know, the average age on the continent is 19. And so you really start looking at the 19-year-old and like what's happening with the 19-year-old.
Yeah.
And I do think that we're gonna see that. You know, the one of the main reasons people go there is obviously for infrastructure. And, you know, I think as we see more infrastructure being built to these tier two, tier three cities, we're gonna see people and jobs and business move there as well.
Yeah, so. But you're part of that, to be clear. So maybe you're not like a Belt and Roads kind of like Chinese folks coming in and spending $100 million on a new kind of highway system. And yet, when you think about infrastructure, what is it all about? It's about being able to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And this rideshare program, which you're enabling, is an infrastructure play. Effectively, you're an infrastructure play in tier two and tier three cities, allowing somebody to live in a different city and yet still be able to get to the market, still be able to get to an office without having to walk.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about, so you're in business with Colin. Another thing that's unique about your story is that you got this partnership.
Yeah.
Right? And there's an iron sharpening iron. If I think back about my own entrepreneurial experience, every time I've had a partner, and there's this beautiful progression of just finding somebody who's shared, got the same shared passion and energy around something and doing something together, but then figuring yourself out and your own personal ambitions within the context of the business. And there's some iron sharpening iron. There's maybe even some, so let's call it out, friction and conflict.
Yeah.
And then you get to this more mature space where you're really on mission. You understand the benefits and the challenges of your partner. Talk to us through the partnership process as you build a high stress business, because you're building this business in a foreign market, new culture. What are those tensions like?
Yeah, I have lots of thoughts on this. I'll try to keep them short, but high level partnership. I say this often. I say partnership is not a good idea. It's a God idea. Like it is woven into the fabric of how we were created. I mean, nobody would argue that we're created for people. And so why would we assume any different when we're in the marketplace building businesses? Yeah. So I think that's just that's one of the things I've learned. You know, Colin and I, the story is very providential. And I couldn't, again, back to Stanford, I couldn't have wrote this up in a business strategy class. But we went to school together at a Christian university, a large one in Virginia called Liberty. And you know, he moved to Uganda. I moved to the UK. We were not really friends. We knew of each other, and we didn't have each other's phone numbers even. Mm. 5 years later, the Lord reconnected our steps because of COVID. He got stuck in the U.S. out in San Francisco, and that's how he and I actually ultimately met in person to chat about what he was doing and what the Lord was doing. And so it came on the backs of prayer, actually. So I was praying with my wife for a few years, 2018, 2019, for something to do on the continent of Africa with very little context, by the way. And he, at the same time, was praying for a business partner, a brother to do this thing with. Yeah. And so we were praying these things 8,000 miles away. And then the Lord connected us to a mutual friend who's actually here at the Lion's Den, which is cool. Yeah. And so that's, you know, I say that to say the things that I value about partnership, that it was the Lord working in that from the get-go.
More and more pastors are realizing the church can be a launching pad, equipping entrepreneurs to build redemptively and make a real difference. We've made it simple to serve the entrepreneurs in your church and your city. No cost, no catch. Get access to a ready-to-go video series, templates, and tools to host an 8-week foundation group right in your church. Just register with us, and we'll even direct local entrepreneurs to your community. We're building a network of 250 partnering churches across the country, each one featured as a go-to hub for faith-driven entrepreneurs in the area. Want to join the movement? All it takes is a 10-minute call with our team. Visit the link below to get started.
And I think it's hard when we're ambitious and we want to start something and we know that partnership's a good idea to just try to go find somebody really quick. And I think one of the things that I can say as a lesson learned, you know, looking back, is that prayer was the impetus for the partnership.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really unique there that, again, you can't learn in school. You can only learn on your knees. And, you know, we are kind of both seeking the Lord for the same thing and in his goodness. And so from that, you know, some of the things that I valued in our business partnership, yes, there's tensions. Yes, there's good conflict. You know, we created an operating agreement when we started together.
Yeah.
And it's a very in-depth operating agreement. I found a lot of people that are, you know, Christians that are building together just kind of bypass that because there's just trust.
Yeah.
And we've never had to look at it, but it's there. And yeah, I think that was kind of like a foundational bedrock of us having trust in each other. Like, what are you going to commit? What am I going to commit?
Yeah.
And knowing that and sticking to that, holding each other accountable. And I, you know, it's a risky market, just like the States are a risky market. And so I say, if the business collapsed tomorrow and it all just failed, which I hope it doesn't, I don't think it will. But if it did, the thing that I would take away most would be not the amazing people we've been able to hire, the thousands and thousands of people we've served, but it truly is, it'd be the friendship and the brotherhood that I have with him.
Oh,
that would be by far, and I've said this over and over, he's the best leader I've ever got to work with. And he's 32. And it's just because he leads with humility. Obviously, all the assessments, you know, we are actually really comparable for one another, which is, again, the Lord's goodness. But yeah, that's some specifics on that.
No, that's awesome. Okay. So I want to ask you about scaling a business.
Yeah.
And then actually, even before we get there, and maybe they're related, about the intentionality you have with building community with these drivers.
Yeah.
I've seen the videos, and there's some incredible videos that you can all see on YouTube and on different websites. Just check out PureFlow and you'll see a just great overview, because I think it does a really good job of showing these drivers coming together and being in community fellowship. And they don't need to be, but they are, and they're opening up God's word together. They're praying for each other.
Yeah.
How have you seen that scale? Do you find like that most people opt out of it? How is that? I can see how that might have worked with the original six drivers, because you've got that community, you've got that relationship. Yeah. But does it scale?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's to answer the question, like in real numbers, yeah, like it was actually really easy with six. It was pretty easy. Like when we had 80 customers, 80 were showing up to their kind of time when they made their payment and they would gather for fellowship. Then when we had 500 customers, it was about 85% were still coming. So it's still pretty high percentage. And then a practical challenge was that they were having to drive to pay. And if they're driving from a long ways, they're just adding on to their payment. I mean, it's the cost to just make the payment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So then obviously we have digital payment, you know, infrastructure. And so when digital payments were introduced and were accessible for people, when we went from 500 to 5,000, the ease of them not to show up was a lot easier. The invitation was still there. But what we found, like even last week, there was 1,000 guys around the table.
Wow.
And these are guys that took time out of their day because I think they see the value in knowing God, having a meal with other people.
Yeah.
They want to learn. They're eager. And that's the Holy Spirit, I think, moving around a table. Literally, for us, it's a physical table, but setting the environment for people to come back. And, you know, the scale piece, it was a shift for us. Our strategy shifted on everything. We always knew we wanted to be like a Christian company, and like we wanted to keep our mission first, but that doesn't really cut it when you're scaling. You've got to have real strategy in place. And so our strategy shifted from being a finance company to a hospitality business. And so when we onboard people, when we hire people, we're thinking about, can you work in this hospitality business? Can you become a person and create places that others want to come back to?
Yeah.
And we can teach you how to collect money or like, you know, do the reports. There's a competency piece, obviously, that you have to have, but our focus is on that and being excellent. And so we really want to focus on caring for people, creating a place that others want to come back to. You know, as Jesus often did, reclining, dining at the table with Pharisees, with the disciples, with the poor, in spirit and in money, you know, the true impoverished. And so that's really what our heartbeat is and our strategy is. Like, are we creating places that people want to come back to? And practically what that looks like for us is, you know, we are a finance company, but we don't have, like, if you were to go to any bank, you know, you walk in and there's tellers, right? Like, you go up to somebody and there's literally a divider between you and them. That's not the most, like, hospitable thing. It's like you coming over to my house and I'm like, hey, you just stay in that room. I'll stay in this room. Yeah. And I hope you want to come back. No, I'd greet them with a hug, which is what we do. I'd address them by name, which is what we do. We invite them. We show them where to go, which is what you do at your house if I were to come over. And we also, we take houses a lot of times and we convert them to basically banks. And so, because we want to be hospitable. So those are some practical things that we've done to ensure that, like, we're creating places that people want to come back to.
That's fascinating to me. So that's obviously very countercultural, because you are a finance company.
Yeah.
To reframe it as a hospitality company has got to do lots of great things for customer retention, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, tell me, what is the... talk about that a little bit. What's the competitive landscape like?
Yeah. So there are other asset financers that do, you know, mobility financing like us. You know of a few of them. They're not only in Uganda, they're across East Africa, across Africa as a whole, because it's a massive market. I mean, there's tens of millions, if not 100 million people just in Africa that, you know, do this for a living, riding motorcycles. And so there's a huge need. The banks typically won't lend to this part of, you know, this consumer. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to, because there's the liability of understanding how to secure the asset, track the asset, and it's generally a hard person to track down and make a payment. So that's why we lead with relationships. But yeah, the competitors are out there. I think, you know, around kind of how we've approached it, back to the counterculture upside down, is like, we've really gone like bootstrap, you know, from 6 to 80 to 100 to 500 to 5,000. Putting capital on the business as needed and not selling any of the business off. And so we've been able to retain ownership, Whereas our competitors, which we compete with, by the way, in local markets, but they're bigger from a macro economics kind of view if you looked at their business, but they, a lot of them have overcapitalized themselves because they took the Stanford playbook, if you will. I'm using it in quotes, no knock on Stanford, but you know, they kind of took that playbook, you know, Kampala, Nairobi, Mombasa, and then go to tier two, then tier three, because they saw there's more market there. We still haven't even touched tier one. But when you go to tier one, you got to get a lot of capital. Well, then you overcapitalize yourself, and then COVID happens, and you sit on thousands of repossessed assets, and that can really put your business under. And so there, I think what we've seen in the competitive landscape is that this like slower growth model has, I think it will have a more lasting
opportunity. But also presumably the fact that you've got this focus on hospitality and community and relationships. And so as there are other competitive options, you're thinking, you know what, I love the guys at PureFlow, and maybe I could go down the street. And it's not that they're not looking at what the costs are, but when you're love, when you delight your customer and you like to serve them, that actually translates into good business, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, Chick-fil-A talks about creating raving fans. Yeah. And, you know, that's what we want to do is we still have a very, very high percentage of our customers come from word of mouth. Yeah. And, you know, it's the holy grail of marketing, as they say. And so we're trying to double down on that.
No customer acquisition costs. And a lot of times when they come in a referral, not only that, but they're much less likely to churn.
Absolutely.
So you have infinitely more lifetime value as well.
And they're coming back for second assets, which is awesome. We'd love to go on that financial journey with them. We've now even opened up to, you know, more expensive assets after they moved to the ownership of the first one. And so that's the journey. Not only are we getting the value of seeing them relationally, which is awesome, but also for them. I mean, economically, it's transforming their family's future.
Yeah.
You know, one of the costs of customer acquisition, somebody on our team, he loves football, soccer, and we have a football team, PureFlow Football Club. It's real. And they're well known in Uganda.
That's cool.
And so we run these massive, we play in the corporate leagues.
Yeah.
And so now we're the best team. Like, we weren't going to be second. So
this is like a welcome to Wrexham in Uganda.
Yeah, that's exactly. Awesome. Yeah. So we will hire out a team and we go compete. And we get to brand the whole event. There'll be 5,000 people in these stadiums. And that's how we start into new markets.
Wow.
And that was a creative approach. And it's really, really inexpensive to, you know, I'm giving a tip out there if somebody hears this. But that's how we've, and a lot of the Boda guys will show up on the weekends to these. I mean, people love to watch football.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, though, if we weren't excellent in it, we would lose the first game and they wouldn't see our team the rest of the day. But instead, we're winning the tournaments. Yeah. So we're getting to play all day long. We're on the field. I mean, we lined the thing with 40 banners, like it's, and we're on the mic all day long, which is pretty cool. Great.
I love that. I love it. Two times of customer acquisition. Number one is delighting your customers to get referrals. Number two, having a football team that you sponsor.
Yeah.
I love that. That's super cool. Okay. So next question. You mentioned the fact that you live outside of Atlanta.
Yep.
You know, you spend a lot of time in Uganda, but you're not there full time.
Yeah.
How do you balance that? And how do you find leadership? And or what does it look like to own and run a company that's an ocean away?
Yeah. I was talking to another entrepreneur yesterday and he's dealing with the same challenge himself. And he's actually from the country in which he's running the business, but now he's in the US. And trust, obviously, that's kind of the bedrock of culture, like great, healthy culture. You know, some of our first employees, or we call them team members. So some of our first team members, Colin, has actually known now for like 12 years. And so he's known them for over like, you know, almost half their life. Like there's a ton of trust. He used to teach them in high school. Mm-hmm. And those are people that we're entrusting to make decisions, to lead departments. And then, you know, another thing is like, I think there's this perspective of kind of US Africa relations from an organizational standpoint where we think that it's like an NGO, which a lot of times the way I've seen nonprofits work, I'll just speak broadly that you have an NGO in country doing the programs, and then you have a nonprofit team here in the US doing fundraising. And they really don't talk that much, which is fine. Like, that's how the model works. Somebody's there running the programs, and this is the resourcing. You know, that's not how our business runs. Like, we run like any remote business would run. Like, I wake up on a Monday morning, and we run a leadership team meeting every Monday morning. We don't miss it. It's a 90-minute call. We're talking about the most important things with the key leaders in our business. And that's happening every Monday. You know, Colin and I have direct reports who lead teams.
Yeah.
We have one-on-ones with them every week, right? Check in on their spiritual walk. I check in on their family. The girl that reports to me, we just celebrated her giveaway this past weekend. It's like we're involved in that stuff. It's just like
it's
I would
giveaway.
It's leading up to a wedding, so much like an engagement, if you will.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we're not disconnected in that. I mean, just like I would run a, you know, plumbing company or a SaaS business here, like I would meet with my team.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's a lot of it is it's not this like we have one call a week. You know, we're having 12 calls a week, and so we're very much engaged in the business. Yeah. So,
okay. What kind of encouragement would you give to somebody who's watching this and saying, you know, I'm compelled by the opportunities that are in Africa. I'd like to get involved. I'm not even really sure how to even start. I mean, it's this huge continent, 1.3 billion people. I didn't grow up there. What counsel would you give to them as they try to understand whether God would call them to an emerging market?
Yeah. So from our story and really Colin's, one of the lessons I've learned is start with where you are with what you have. Mm-hmm. You know, he did it. He took the risk.
Entrepreneurship can be a lonely journey. The weight of leadership, heavy. You've been called to create impact through your business. But here's the truth. Isolation kills vision. Comfort destroys calling. That's why Faith-Driven Entrepreneur created our foundation groups. Join 10 fellow entrepreneurs who truly understand your path just for 1 hour a week for 8 weeks, online or in person. Together, you'll explore God's purpose for your business through practical, purposeful discussions with others who really get it. Don't journey alone. Your calling is too important. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneur.org and join a group today. That's faithdrivenentrepreneur.org.
And, you know, if you think about it,
actually, rewind the clock a little bit more. So yeah. Collins in the States, and somehow he just decides, I'm going to move to Uganda. What was the story?
Yeah.
He didn't start the business for a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
But why did he go to Uganda?
God told him to go. So he went there for 4 months in 2013.
How did God tell him to go, too?
When he was there, he like very clearly heard the Lord. I don't know. I don't want to say it was audible, but he sensed that the Lord was saying, this is where you're going to be after school. And so he calls his family up, and he was getting a commercial aviation degree. So he's a pilot. And so then in 2015, when he finished, he just moved over there and did what most Americans would do, which is like starting a nonprofit. And then he was just challenged around this idea of sustainability, which even in the nonprofit space, we're still trying to figure out how to make nonprofits sustainable. And ultimately, the way we do that is market solutions. And he just did that after 2 years, found a real market solution to a problem. And so I would say start with where you are and what you have.
Yeah.
You know, if you look, if
but there's something before that, though, he went to Uganda where he heard from God.
Yeah.
So he went out. And so if you're just listening to this and thinking, maybe I call it an emerging markets, sounds like go to an emerging market.
Yeah.
And then get a sense and pray.
Yes.
It's like, God, do you want me here? Do you want me to go home?
Yeah. If you talk about hours sitting under trees, just praying.
Ah.
He also walked every day to his office that the organization that he was running previously. He walked every day. I think it was a mile or two. And that's actually how he met the Boda Boda guys. So it's you know, it's common sense.
They drive by him and say, do you want to ride?
Yeah, he's like, I don't have the money for your ride, so I'll just keep walking. But he got to know the guys that way. And yeah, I think to your point, like being there, and I'm grateful that he was there, because a lot of the story I get to steward and share today is like as a result of his faithfulness and taking those steps and like being intentional with people, which comes back to how we started the conversation of like just being present and also being obedient to what the Lord's saying. And you know, if the business doesn't work, let's just roll this out for a second.
Yeah.
He lost $6,000. Yeah. Like to most people listening to this podcast, like it's not gonna kill you to lose $6,000. Yeah. You have some sort of net. Most likely, you can go get a loan from the bank or do something else. So family or, you know. And that's what I love about these emerging markets. You go there and you could try 100 things with a fraction of the amount of money that would take to try 100 things in the US, and you can fail.
Yeah.
But actually, I would suggest to say that although we could talk about risk if we wanted to on both sides of this equation, in the US and in Africa, but I would say it's actually easier from a just execution standpoint. It's about having a simple idea to solve a simple problem And then you just have to execute.
Yeah. But I also love that you, so you get into something here. We brought on a board of ministry called Halftime as a part of the faith-driven movements. And they have a concept that Bob Buford had pioneered called a low-cost probe.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about, which is with a little bit of money, you can test something to see if there's market adoption.
Yes.
You can get to a minimally viable product and maybe even product market fit much faster in an emerging market, right?
Yes.
And worst case scenario, you tried a couple of times and you found out that I didn't find anything that worked. And in this case, he had tried some other things. He tried an NGO, but he was there present.
Yes.
And went ahead and bought six bikes. And worst case scenario is he loses money on the six bikes.
He actually tried to build airstrips first, which is funny.
Really?
It failed. So, you know, that's one thing to talk about.
That doesn't sound like a low-cost probe.
No, he was trying to buy land off locals to be able to deliver medical supplies because he had malaria at one point and the guy next to him died for $26 all it cost to get the medicine. And and it really kind of moved him to like, that's a real problem, you know, and he wanted to have a solution for it. But, you know, Henry, you've traveled to Africa a lot. I mean, don't you feel as an entrepreneur, someone that has ideas a lot, I don't know about you, but like when I'm there, do you feel like there's just ideas, like they just come. There's so many compared to like if I drive around Dallas today or Atlanta, like I might have a few ideas, but it's like, oh, there's 10 other people doing it. But there, don't you feel like they just, you're like, stop. There's too many ideas in my head.
Well, there's a lot of that. But the other thing being in Africa, and I go to Africa and I love it because I feed off the energy of faith-driven entrepreneurs that are knowing and trusting, being fully reliant on God. And I love that. But there's a freneticism and a dynamism in the marketplace that you can feed off of and that, yes, does get your creative juices going. And then you find a couple of people that are doing some things that are innovating, seem to be working. And then as an investor, I immediately start thinking about, oh my goodness, I wonder if we'd scale this, right?
Yeah.
Bring in enough capital. And there is something fascinating about being there. And just if you're watching the show and you've never been to Africa, go there for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Spend time under a tree. Go on longer walks. Pray. Ask God. God, am I being willful about wanting to do something in emerging markets? Are you calling me here? And then lay out some fleeces. And then the other thing I picked up from our time together, which is so valuable, is the value of partnership. You said something at the outset after I asked you the question about partnership, which is that God views it and you had a framework. What was it?
It's just partnership is not just a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a God idea.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because God sends us out. Jesus sent out every time people in twos, even to get a donkey, right?
Yeah.
A grown man is probably going to be able to handle a donkey by himself, right?
Yeah.
But he sent out two. And there's something really powerful about that. And in each case, I've had a partner. In each case, those partnerships have been started by prayer.
Hmm.
And so that's another thing. So it feels like you kind of can't go wrong. If you go to an emerging market, pray that you'll find the man of peace, use Luke 10 as your framework on that, you'll get a really good sense, right?
I think that's spot on. And just to your point, like go and just see. Go and see.
Yeah.
Because if you want to build, I was talking to some college students last week and I don't think I could have enough like excitement about it. I'm like, guys, the facts are obviously here. Create jobs in Africa. It makes sense. Like there's jobs to be created, lots of people to be employed, lots of market opportunity. But like, it's just so much more simple.
Yeah.
Like, yes, there's challenges, but there's challenges in any business, as you know. But you can solve a simple problem and actually scale it pretty easily there. Like this is a simple problem. If I tried to finance cars in the States, it'd be a really hard business, right? I'd be competing with a ton of people.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great opportunity. And the culture as a whole lives outside, which we don't do that in America. There's this whole idea.
Yeah.
I think there's some books around this, but.
Because that's the other thing that you don't see in Dallas. In Dallas, you drive around, everybody's inside an air-conditioned building.
Yes.
But there, the dynamism and the freneticism you pick up on is because everybody's living outside.
Yes. And you're stepping in, you're trying to solve a real problem, by the way. You have to still do that.
Yeah.
Like, don't solve a problem that you think is a problem. Go figure out if it's a real problem and solve it with a real strategic solution.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when you're doing that, like people are just way more receptive to like be in relationship. And so it's not as hard to lead with relationship in a place. I mean, I think we pick the hardest group of people to lead with relationship because they're probably the quote unquote busiest, literally physically moving all the time of anybody in the country. But yeah, it's a great opportunity to find people outside and do life with them while having a market solution. And so one of the things that you might be asking, like we dealt with this for a while, but you know, how could you make money in the US living on a, like living in cost of US while running a business there. And I think it takes a little bit longer than in the States, but if I were to start a plumbing business tomorrow, or, you know, some other business, property management, I would like keep reinvesting capital into the business and probably not pay myself for a season while I was trying to grow it to where I could afford myself. I'd save up money. And we did the same thing. I think it takes a little bit longer in these places to do that. But what I would challenge people on, and this is something we dealt with, is try not to get too soon out of fear subsidizing yourself with philanthropy too soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead, press the gas. Press the gas. Because when you press the gas, if you have a real solution, like you can scale it faster, which is what we did. And then you get to a place where you can pay yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't have to subsidize with philanthropy. And at that point, I think we really are solving market problems. And then now we're really making Africa, or we're seeing that Africa truly is investable. Because I would say it's not investable if the leaders of the companies aren't getting paid by the company.
Well, we'll throw that illustration. Drive fast, take chances, step on the gas. Why don't you pray, close this out, and pray for this audience of Future of Entrepreneurs.
We'd love to. Lord, I thank you for what you're doing in and through the content and the movement of Faith Driven. And I'm so grateful for a brother like Henry that I've got to meet on this side of eternity that is seeking to live an abundant life. And Lord, that's what we want. We want to live an abundant life led by your spirit that's in us. We've come from death to life. And in that, you've called us into a beautiful opportunity to create with you. And so, Lord, I ask that as my voice goes out amidst the stream of this to any ear that hears, that you'd find them right where they are, that you would take them like you did with Philip and that Ethiopian eunuch, and you'd point them to somebody that just needs to hear. And would you do it in a way, Lord, that is using their gifts, their skills, their ambition, their interest, their experiences, and the resources that you've entrusted them. And I pray that that in your name, because you're the Savior, you're the Creator, and you're the Provider. Amen.
Amen. In Jesus' name, amen.
Yeah.
Thank you for watching, tuning in. Grateful for you, brother.
Come for content, stay for community. Join a faith-driven entrepreneur group online or in person. No cost, no catch. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. That's faithdrivenentrepreneur.org.